World financial markets change even when you're not at your desk. Bloomberg gives anyone a snapshot of what's moving, plus top news, charting, and ways to track their portfolio right on their iPhone or iPod Touch. Download the free Bloomberg application at the iTunes App Store and stay in touch with your money wherever you are. Bloomberg Mobile.
This month in Bloomberg Markets Magazine, Bernanke Empowered, the story of how Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke outsmarted his critics and ended up with more power, not just over management of the economy, but over the regulation of banks and other financial institutions. And these developments are taking place at a time when the U.S. economy is looking increasingly fragile. I'm Ron Henkoff, editor of Bloomberg Markets, with a look at our October issue, now available on newsstands. Also in this month's issue, you find our annual ranking of the best-performing mutual funds, a story on how CalPERS, the biggest public pension fund in the U.S., is recovering from scandal and embracing riskier investments, and a guide to buying vintage cars. Now let's turn to our cover story on Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke. Joining me are the two reporters who wrote the story, Steve Matthews in Atlanta and Joshua Zumbrun in Washington. Both Steve and Josh have been busy today covering the Fed's monthly open market committee meeting. Steve, let's start with today's news. What did the Fed's open market committee decide, and why is it significant?
Well, there were two significant changes in the statement today from the August statement. The Fed, as it has since December 2008, left interest rates at near zero, from 0 to 0.25 percentage point. And they, during the process over the last couple of years, engaged in a process of quantitative easing or buying of securities, buying of mortgage-backed securities and treasury securities to stimulate the economy and bring down long-term interest rates. Now they are positioning themselves to consider a second round of quantitative easing. And the statement had two changes that reflect this move toward a possible new round of unconventional monetary policy easing. In the first point, they said that the current levels of inflation are below what the Fed considers to be consistent with its target for price stability. The target for price stability at the Fed is around 2%. Inflation has been running by the Fed's preferred measure at about 1%. And saying it's below, analysts took that as a sign that the Fed is increasingly uncomfortable with where inflation is, and that that could trigger another round of quantitative easing later this year.
Josh, let me ask you about quantitative easing, which Steve was just talking about, and about some of the other unconventional measures that Ben Bernanke has taken in these extraordinary times since he's been the chairman of the Federal Reserve. And I know some people are asking, what's left in his toolkit? Is there anything else that he can do? So can you go through what some of these unconventional measures have been and what analysts are saying about what can be done next?
Well, everyone agrees that this new round of quantitative easing is probably the Fed's first choice when it comes to doing something new to boost the economy. They've also talked maybe the Fed could, it currently pays a quarter point interest rate on excess reserves. And there's the thought that if you lowered that to maybe 10 basis points or lowered it to zero, that that would do something to boost activity. But the Fed itself doesn't seem to think that would be very effective. They've also talked about changing the language. They pledged to keep low interest rates for an extended period. And there's a thought that maybe they could say, oh, we mean a super extended period now. And that would convince people to bid down the yield on treasuries and help it make it a little cheaper to borrow. But the chance that the Fed is going to do either of those two things is pretty unlikely. The focus is on quantitative easing. And the question there is whether or not it's going to be effective. A Bloomberg Global poll released this week said that 65% of investors don't think that it would boost the economy if the Fed embarks on this new course of action.
So they may have some tools left, but people just don't know if they're going to work. I guess that's a fair way of putting it, right?
They don't know if they're going to work. So maybe in that sense, maybe they don't have very many tools left.
Steve, I wanted to look now at Ben Bernanke's other role as a regulator. And just to recap for our listeners, as recently as the start of the year, The chairman of the Federal Reserve was under fire for failing to detect and deter what became a global financial and economic crisis. And he was reconfirmed for a second term, but only by a vote of 70-30, which is actually the lowest margin in three decades for confirmation of a Federal Reserve chief. And now, lo and behold, he's emerged not only with his reputation intact, but with more powers than ever, particularly over regulation of financial institutions and especially big banks. Tell us how that came about and what kind of powers the Fed chairman now has, which make him, by the way, the most powerful Fed chairman in history.
That's right, Ron. And in fact, if you go back over the last few years, critics of the Fed, many of them in Congress, look at what's happened with the financial crisis, which started with a housing bubble. We had housing prices and a huge amount of speculation, and you had the mortgage industry making subprime loans. Then there was the blow up of subprime lending, and that led to, you know, the crash in housing prices, and the Fed was on the watch. The Fed was on the watch, but basically missed the significance of the housing bubble. Bernanke missed the significance of what was happening with subprime. They endured a lot of criticism. So now they have turned it around. Bernanke becomes the systemic risk regulator. He is regulating the so-called systemic risks of financial bubbles. They become responsible for the large non-bank companies like Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett's company, General Electric. They become responsible for regulating thrift holding companies. And, you know, even in really small ways that don't seem to be significant on the surface, they gain regulatory powers like debit cards, which is something most people don't think of when they think of financial regulation. But one of the costs of what's happening with the Dodd-Frank bill that was passed over the summer is the Fed will regulate debit cards so that Bank of America may take a charge off of $7 to $10 billion because the cost of debit fees is going to come down. And how that happened is a really interesting story, but I would say there are at least two key elements. One is people like Barney Frank looked at Alan Greenspan, Bernanke's predecessor, and said he did a terrible job with regulation, particular consumer regulation. And Bernanke, while when he took over in 2006, didn't really do much and missed the housing bubble initially, he got on board with the regulatory program within a couple of years. So by July 2008, the Fed was doing some regulation that it had never done before. And that won some friends with people like Barney Frank. And the second point is the Fed is a decentralized organization in some respects. There are 12 regional banks. And these regional banks are all headed by presidents who are influential in their communities, people like Tom Honig in Kansas City and Jeff Lacker in Richmond. And these people reached out to their Congress members, to their senators, and were very influential in preserving and in expanding the Fed's powers. And that made a big difference. According to Chris Dodd, one of the people we talked to on this story, that made a huge difference in the end.
One thing I notice you point out in your story, and Josh, let me put this to you, is now the Fed has two very powerful roles. One, of course, is managing the monetary policy, which has always been its function. And now, as Steve was just talking, this new super regulatory function, if I can put it that way. And some people say that those roles are in conflict. And can you elaborate on that? How might they come into conflict and how might it be resolved?
You can imagine a lot of interesting scenarios where it would come into conflict. Even right now is maybe one of them. One way to goose growth in the short term, of course, would be to boost the amount of credit in the economy. And so, you know, if you're raising capital standards on your banks, that's an awfully difficult environment for banks to boost the amount of lending they're doing. They need to take their money to shore up their capital. They can't take that money to increase lending. So if you have a very short-term view, you could just say, well, let's just lower our capital standards, and that'll boost growth, that'll lower employment, that'll make us closer to our to our mandate. But we've seen the results of what can happen if you get too much credit. It can cause your entire banking system to collapse in a very painful way. You know, it works for a couple of years, maybe it can even work for a decade, but eventually it catches up with you. And you can imagine it on the other side as well. If you had an environment where inflation was starting to take off. And we talked to Bill Poole, who was the president of the St. Louis Fed for a number of years in our story, and he said this is one of the things that happened leading to the great inflation in the 1970s, is that a little prior to that, the savings and loan industry was under a lot of pressure. They had all borrowed short-term to fund long-term assets. So when the Fed wanted to start raising rates, that meant they were raising the short-term borrowing costs of these savings and loan institutions. And they knew that if they did that, they were going to blow up, because the savings and loans had all these long-term assets at much lower rates. You know, you can't make your short-term rate 7% if you're trying to make sure your savings and loans don't go bankrupt with 5% mortgages. And so the Fed, you know, felt a little pressure to keep interest rates too low, because they didn't want to damage the savings and loan industry. And the result of that was that rates stayed too low for too long, and inflation took off, and it got to be even more difficult to control. And the subsequent crisis in the savings and loan industry ended up being pretty severe. It ended up costing taxpayers several hundred billion dollars in the 1980s to clean that whole mess up.
So I guess the bottom line is regulatory and monetary policy can sometimes be at odds with each other, and that it'll be up to the Fed to sort it out. And I guess we ought to remind our listeners that the Dodd-Frank bill, which recently passed, which both of you have talked about, is, I think, about 2,400 pages long, and that's even before the regulations have been written. So I guess there are a lot of unknowns as we think about Ben Bernanke and his job at the Federal Reserve. I want to thank Josh and Steve, and I'm Ron Hinkoff, editor of Bloomberg Markets Magazine. I've been speaking today with Steve Matthews and Joshua Zumbroom, the authors of our October cover story, Bernanke Empowered, How Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke Has Outsmarted His Detractors and Emerged More Powerful Than Ever, just at a time when the U.S. economic recovery is sputtering. In the October issue, you'll also find our annual ranking of top mutual funds, a story about CalPERS, the largest public pension fund in the U.S., and a look at the collectors of high-end vintage cars. All this and more is in the October issue of Bloomberg Markets Magazine, now available on newsstands and at Borders and Barnes & Noble's bookstores. You can subscribe to Bloomberg Markets by going on our website, bloombergmarkets.com. I'm Ron Hinkoff, editor of Bloomberg Markets. Thanks for listening.